Hi, here I am again. So this morning we're going to be talking about the book of Acts again, because we're going through the books of Luke and Acts, and I want to create a little context to the story that we're going to be reading today. And the context is in the book of Acts, we have been seeing how God has been using ordinary people to do really extraordinary, crazy things. And right at the beginning of Acts, we see where the Holy Spirit, while they're praying, the Holy Spirit comes upon these people. And they start to speak in other tongues, and they start, and Peter goes out, and he just preaches a message, and thousands of people come to follow Jesus right then and there. People are transformed. They begin to lose those idols of materialism and the idols that they were following before, and they become transformed. And God's using them to meet the needs of the poor. So they're selling their land, and they're giving the money away, and they're sharing their possessions. They're learning about things. They're doing all kinds of things to change the world around them. And it is amazing, and God's adding people, and it's really awesome. And even Peter, he gets a vision. He gets a vision that, you know what, this gospel, this good news, it's not just for the Jews, it's for everybody. And so he begins to share it with everybody, the Gentiles and the Jews. And God is doing amazing things. But there are some that don't like this. And at first, the Jewish establishment, what they started to do was they started to persecute them. The first act was stoning of Stephen, and after that, a persecution broke out, and people started scattering all over the place. And it was a difficult time. But now, in this chapter, we're going to be seeing that the heat is being turned up. Not only is the Jewish establishment persecuting the Christians, but now the Roman Empire is getting into the game. And this is a big turning point in the church. I'm going to read this to you, and I want you to just to imagine this scene like you're sitting watching TV, but make the projection your mind, okay? So, because this is a really fascinating passage. So, you ready?
Yeah.
Start the film rolling. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw this, that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to the guard by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So, Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood at guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," he said. And the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals." And Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea what the angel was doing was actually happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and the second guards and came to an iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know, without a doubt, that the Lord has sent an angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening the door and exclaimed, "Peter's at the door! Peter's at the door!" "You're out of your mind," they told her. But she kept insisting that it was so, and they said, "Oh, must be his angel." Yeah. But Peter kept on knocking. And when they opened the door, they saw him. They were astonished. Peter motioned with his hands to them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said. And he left for another place. In the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be
kept on knocking.
So, what a story. What a story. And the one that is sort of starting all this is Herod. He's the Judean king called Herod Agrippa. And he was a cruel and evil man. Now, this is not the same Herod that was in the oversaw the crucifixion of Jesus. This is a different Herod. This is actually his nephew. And he was installed there because he was friends with the current emperor of Rome, whose name was Caligula. Now, Caligula was a mean, nasty, perverted, sadistic dude. And he had a lot of power. And guess who he was friends with? Herod. And you know, you kind of hang with people that you're like, or you become with people, you become like the people you hang out with. And Herod got that streak, just like Caligula did. He was an unscrupulous politician. And you know what? Whatever would gain him popularity, he would do it. And he saw that executing James was popular with the Jews. They were excited about it. They were like, "Oh, way to go. We like that. We like that." And being a vain man, he continued on that. He said, "Well, you know what? Let me go after Peter. He's one of those leaders. He's one of the big dudes in this. So I'm going to arrest him, but I'm not gonna kill him right now because it's the Passover and it's kind of not cool to do it during that season because everyone's, you know, celebrating. So we're gonna wait till after that. So I'm gonna put him in prison. But when I put him in prison, you know, back in chapter 4, if you may remember, Peter was actually in prison before under the Jews, and it was probably kind of like a minimum security prison, I guess, because he just basically walks out. An angel comes, just releases him. He's out totally free. No one knows how he got out. But this is now the Roman Empire. This is a different story. This is Herod. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to do it. So we have a lot of pressure to hold on to this Peter guy. Now, this is Family Sunday, so we have a bunch of students here in our in the room. So this is a question for the students. Are you ready? School's starting soon, so you better get ready. This is a math question. You ready? All right. Now, Herod set up 4 squads of soldiers. And in each squad, he has 4 soldiers. How many soldiers altogether are with him? 16, yes! All right. Summer's worth of tutoring was not in vain. Excellent. And as you can see from the end of it, they know that if they let him go, they get killed. They get killed. So this is no joke. This is a serious job. So, here he is. He's not getting out. And they say they're going to put him on trial, but from Jesus' time, remember, the same thing happened to Jesus. He was on trial during Passover. But in their setup, there was really only one verdict that was going to happen from this trial. He's going to be guilty, and he's going to be killed. They all knew that. So the disciples, they're afraid. Their leader is in prison, and death is imminent. And they are not just, this is no small thing. They are up against the ruling world power, the Roman Empire. And what do? They pray. They pray. Now, I have another question for you all. This is for the kids that are normally not here. I have some theological questions. Okay. Do you think that God knows that Peter is in jail? Does God know that Peter is in jail? Yes. Yes. Yes, okay, he does. I think you're right. So let me ask another question. Do you think that God could get Peter out of jail? Does he have the ability to do that? One yes. Yes, okay. Okay, all right. So we're in sort of agreement here that God can get him out. Now, the next question is God good? Do you think that God would want to get Peter out? Yes. You do? Okay. All right, I'll take the nod as a yes. Excellent. All right, so God knows that he's in jail. God can get him out of jail. And God would want him out of jail, right? All of these things are true. So, now, this may sound like a strange question to ask as a pastor, but why bother praying? Why bother, right? God knows it. God knows he's there. There's a problem. He can get him out. He's got the power. Why bother? Why bother praying? I mean, we have to do that. It's just, I don't know. It's annoying. God, you know what to do. Just, I don't know, do it. Take care of it. But that's, I don't know. I mean, all over the Bible, it happens over and over again. So when I came to this passage, honestly, that's what I'm thinking of. I think I'm not the only one that thinks like that. You don't have to raise your hand, but have you ever thought that? Have you ever thought, why do I have to bother? You know everything. You got this. You're all powerful. Why? And some of us might think, maybe it doesn't even have any effect. It's all up to me. But in pondering this and thinking about it, I came across a quote. And it's from C.S. Lewis. I'd like to read it to you. It says, "Can we believe that God ever really modifies his action in response to the suggestions of men?" Right? Can we really believe that? For infinite wisdom does not need telling what is best, and infinite goodness needs no urging to do it. But neither does God need any of these things that are done by finite agents, that's us, whether living or inanimate. He could, if he chose, repair our bodies miraculously without food, or give us food without the aid of farmers, bakers, and butchers, or convert the heathen without missionaries. Instead, okay, if you've been sleeping up till now, pay attention to this. Instead, he allows soils and weather and animals and muscles and minds and wills of men to cooperate in the execution of his will. God, said Pascal, instituted prayer in order to lend his creatures the dignity of causality. This is a big thing. God instituted prayer in order to lend us, his creatures, the dignity of causality. So for the students in the room, causality means like, if I do something, it's going to have an effect. There's a cause and effect. If I push this table over, it's going to fall. Okay? I affect things. But not only prayer, whenever we act at all, he lends us that dignity. It is not really stranger nor less strange that my prayers should affect the course of events than that my other actions should do so. They have not advised or changed God's mind, that is, his overall purpose. But that purpose will be realized in different ways according to the actions, including the prayers of his creatures. Heavy, huh? That's heavy. And I've been pondering this all week. And so I came up with one sentence, because I'm a simple man, and I need one sentence. God has given us the dignity to be world changers by our active work and our prayer work. God has given us the dignity to be world changers by our active work and our prayer work. Now, let me just define what I mean by world changer first. But when I talk about world changer, I'm not talking about necessarily that you come up with an invention or a discovery or something that everybody in the world is affected by and changed. And everyone goes, oh, you're the inventor of the hoopty frats. Awesome. Everyone has one. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the two things. One is your inner world and then the world around you. So first, the inner world, that we change our own inner world. By that I mean everything that's sort of in my skin. My health, right? I can eat McDonald's hamburgers every single day for the next 2 years. And I have total freedom to do that, with the exception of my wife telling me not to do that. But I could do that, right? I can do whatever I want. And God is not necessarily going to stop me, okay? But I can affect my body. I can affect my mind. You know, there's students in the room. You can affect your mind. You can change how much you know about math or physics or history. You know, we can develop our skills that, and in ourselves, that we can grow in the fruits of the Spirit, right? We can grow in love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and self-control. Those are things that happen inside my world that change my world. And that's going to have an effect on the outside world too. So I can be mean to you, or I can be kind to you. We can have an effect on our neighbor, the way we talk to people. So that's what I mean by changing the world. The world that's right around us, maybe our relationships and our family, our neighborhood, our workplace, we can have an effect on that. Okay? Now, let's talk about active work. Our active work is what we do. When we create something, you read something, you help somebody, you study, you paint, you sing, you talk, you're a farmer, you're gardening, you're planning things. Basically, anything you do to affect yourself or others, or people in the environment, or the environment or the people around you, that's your active work, the stuff you do when you're moving a muscle. So you might encounter, and you may have encountered, or you may be one, I'll give you an example that you may be able to relate to. Let's say you meet someone who needs a job, and they say, you know what, I'm just going to trust that God's going to give me a job. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just trusting that God is going to get me a job. I'm not going to hand out any resumes. I'm not going to see anyone. I'm not going to do anything. I believe that God is going to give me a job. So I think that it could be, if I walk into Shelter Rock, I'm expecting this. The greeter's going to hand me a bulletin. And then the next thing they're going to do is they're going to hand me my job offer. And they're going to say, see you Monday. What would you tell that guy? Come on, just tell me, what would you tell him? Get a job. Well, he's trusting that God's going to get a job. It's going to happen. But what would you tell them to do? No career counselors in here at all? Get a resume. There's a good start. One other thing. Help this guy out, please. Look in the want ads. What was there? One more. Go on some interviews. Yes, you can do that, right? There are things you can do. This is a, you guys are all over this thing, right? I know you are all over this thing. You get this because you want him to do something. Get a degree. Take some action. Now, that action is necessary. And at the same time, you know what? God doesn't tell you if your actions are going to be good or evil. You can do evil work. God, he gives us that free will. That's scary, right? You have a lot of free will. And so right here, you know, we have the free will to kill, destroy, to cheat, to lie, to betray. We got a lot of power over ourselves and the world around us. A lot of power. So in our passage, we see about Herod. He says, it was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. Just like that. He had that in him to do that. And there are many people right now that are engaged in good works. In Houston and places where their people are putting themselves in harm's way to help others. They're going to help people rebuild and take care of their homes. And actually, later on in the service, we're going to be taking an offering for the hurricane victims and the monsoon victims during our offering time. And that you can take an active part in just in giving money. That's an active work, right? But what I want to tell you is that's only part of it. Just like you would say, you know what, dude, you got to do something. You got to make a phone call. You got to go to class. Do something to get that job. In the same way, prayer work changes things in a way that active work cannot. Prayer work gives us access to God's power and God's wisdom. It engages a spiritual realm. It allows us to appropriate God's power and the Holy Spirit to touch relationships, touch us, to change us from the inside out, that just doing stuff and engaging with things, it will never do it. Human efforts will never solve these problems. It feels like they can, but you know there are some things you can't work yourself out of. There are some things in your life you can't figure it out. And no one can give you the right size wrench to fix it. There's more to the world than what we see. That may be hard for us to believe. And I know in this room, it's like we are in church. We're singing the song, but we operate like it's only things and stuff. Just what I can see. That's all I engage with. But see, God can open doors that our human efforts can't. God can fight for us in a spiritual realm where muscle, minds, and money cannot overcome. Think of it like this. Let's say there's a very sick baby on a hospital bed. And the parents are there, and they're hoping that this baby is going to be taken care of. And in walks a soldier with a rifle and a grenade launcher. Would that be the right thing to do? Is that soldier going to help? What do you think? Oh, what's a grenade launcher? Okay, good question. Okay, I think it's about that long, and you put a grenade in it, and then you can launch it, and then it explodes far away. Not helpful for a sick baby in a hospital, okay? That's the point. It's the wrong tool. It's the wrong person. It's the wrong thing. It's not going to help you at all. The parents are going to be like, get out of here. Get me a doctor. That's what you need, right? It's the same thing. when we try to use our work activity, our active work, to do what our prayer work has to do. So, when we ask the question, why bother to pray? We have to ask, why bother do anything? Why do we bother to pray? Well, why bother study for your test? Why bother going to school? Why brush your teeth in the morning? Why shower? Why exercise? Why not eat McDonald's hamburgers every single day? Why not? You see, they're the same. Just like you would take care of your body and exercise and try to do things to make your body strong, you would take responsibility for that. We have to take responsibility with our prayer work as well, because it's just important. And so we might be thinking, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that that's true, Jim. All right, well, I'm going to go to Jesus, and let's ask Jesus what he thinks, okay? So when Jesus is asked about prayer, the disciples say, Jesus, we want you to tell us how to pray. This is what he gives them, okay? And I was shocked. I mean, I've read this my whole life, but when I read it, I was shocked. And because in this context, because what I'm seeing is that right off the bat, he's engaging us in a world that's beyond things and stuff. It's beyond the active world. That Jesus is saying on a daily basis that you need to engage in this because you have, God's given you the dignity, the power, the influence over things of God. And here's what he says. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Whoa, look at that. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We're praying for God's will to be done here. Wouldn't you think, well, God, I mean, it's your will. You kind of know what's going on. But no, Jesus himself, if we believe that Jesus has got something to say on this topic, we need to take this seriously. Jesus is saying, you need to pray, you need to pray for God's kingdom to be here, for God's will to be done in your life, in the life of those that you love, in the world around you. You need to engage in that. That's work, right? That's a lot of responsibility, but it's that dignity. He gives you that dignity to be able to have an effect on it. And he says, now this one blew me away. He says, give us today our daily bread. So God knows that we need food, right? But he's saying, you need to pray daily for your daily bread. I was shocked. Really? We do need to go to work, show up, you know, show up on time, be respectful, do your job, all that kind of stuff. That's all good. That's our active work. But what he's saying, at the same time, don't just wait for your paycheck to come. He's saying actively be praying for your daily bread, for God's sustenance, for God to provide for the spiritual stuff and the material stuff. It's very nitty-gritty. It's very earthy. You see that? And then he says, forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. So he's talking about a whole realm of forgiveness and you know, things like jealousy and things of the soul and relationships. All this stuff starts coming in. He's saying, you know what? You got to engage in this in prayer. Yeah, you need to go to them and do the proper thing and ask for forgiveness and all that, but that's just part of it. The hard stuff, the stuff that's in here, that has to be conquered through prayer. You know, even in that one, you can say, I forgive you. But you said the words, and you kind of sort of meant it, but you know something didn't happen in here. There's where you need to pray. If you need an example of this, how about that one? You say the words, that's sort of the act of work, that's the proper thing to do. But you know what? This is not going to change on your own. This is a spiritual work. We need to do prayer work to make that happen, or it's just going to come up another day. Does that make sense? We need to do both. So, in summary, again, God has given us the dignity to be world changers, our inner world and the outer world, by our active work and our prayer work. And there's in this passage, there's a great little, this part of the scene is where we see both things happening. In verse 5, it says, "So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him." So they're doing the prayer work, right? And I'm sure Peter's praying also. But they're doing this heavy lifting prayer work. They're earnestly praying, right? They're constantly praying. And remember, James just died. They're not saying, "Oh, I guess God doesn't answer prayer. Let's stop that. Let's try something different." They don't do that. They keep praying. They keep praying. They are persistent. Now listen to this. Verse 6, it says, "The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance." Okay, think about this. This is the night before he's going on trial, which we know how it's going to go. He's going to die, all right? He's sleeping like a baby. Peter is sleeping like a baby. He's between two soldiers, and there he is. Sleeping. Talk about peace, right? I mean, if there's ever a time when you shouldn't be at peace, it would be that night, right? If you're ever going to be anxious, that would be the night to do it. But he's not. I mean, I'm sure they were praying for peace over him and that, you know, he trusted in God. He is totally at peace. You know, that's part of that prayer work. You know, you're not going to have five steps to get you to that place where you're sleeping like that. That's prayer work at its best. So here's the next part of it. It says, "Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared and a light shone in the cell." Peter's still asleep. There's a light shining right on top of him. He's still out. And so what does the angel do? The way I read it, it's like he kicked them. He kicked them awake. He says, get up, quick, get up. It wasn't like, "Peter, time to get up." It was like, "Peter, get up." And Peter gets up. And he thinks he's having a dream. He thinks it's like a vision. So then the angel says, "Put on your clothes. Put on your sandals." And Peter does so. "Wrap the cloak around you and follow me." And Peter's kind of doing this. So he's telling him everything to do. I mean, if you look at this, it's like getting your kids up to come to church or go to school, right? It's like you have to tell them to do everything. But here's the cool thing is that he actually does require Peter to move. He requires Peter to do stuff. The heavy lifting, the hard stuff is taken care of by prayer. You know, the arrival of the angels, keeping the soldiers asleep, breaking the chains, all that stuff, that's the hard stuff. And then when he leaves this barracks, there's this huge iron gate that just opens on it. That's the hard stuff. The prayer takes care of that. But Peter does have to get up and put on his shoes. And the angel requires him to do it. We participate in it. That example of how the two are working together. So I just want to talk a little bit about how they pray. And that we can model that. One is that they are earnest. And that word is sometimes translated fervent. And it's not like this big emotional crying out. It's not really that kind of thing. It's just being persistent. It's being constant. We are at it. The other thing we see there is they're doing it together. They're in this together and they're praying together. And then the last thing is that they're astonished. And in the beginning, when they hear about the answered prayer, you know the funny thing is they're not astonished. They don't believe it. And does it ever happen? Like God does something, you see it happen, and he's like, well, that was because whatever. And we kind of blow it off. And what I'm saying is be astonished. Be open that God's going to do something. And be astonished because that's a part of being thankful. And so they were astonished because it was a miracle. So I want to give you a challenge. This is the 7-day prayer challenge. You ready? So here's what you do. Pick an issue, any issue. Something that's big on your heart that just feels like, you know what, I can't get any traction on this. It could be an inner world thing. It could be relationships, whatever. And then find one, two, maybe three people at the most to pray about it with you. All right? And then make a plan that you're going to pray for 7 days. All right? Just 7 days. Maybe if you live with the other person, great, you can pray together, or you can phone each other or text each other, or just agree to pray at the same each day. Whatever it is, just something, or you're praying, you're engaged. I'm not saying 40 days, I'm not saying all year, I'm just saying 7 days. And just wait and be astonished. Just wait to see what God does. Just try it. I would love to hear what happens. Then two more things. One is to, we have our prayer meeting here on Tuesday at 7 every week. And then we're starting this thing called 24/7 prayer. It's going to be for 2 weeks starting October 1st. And you can sign up for doing that as well. So we're trying to give you ways that you can engage and be a part of prayer here at Shelter Rock in a really practical way. Well, as the worship team comes up, I want to encourage you that the book of Acts is called the book of Acts because the full name is the Acts of the Apostles. But it's really, of course, the Acts of God. It's the Acts of the church. It's the Acts of people, regular folks like you and I with jobs, friends, families, annoying situations, sickness. They had it all. They had all that stuff. And just like that church in Acts, we can change our inner world and the world around us. You know, inside we can renounce the things that are not good for us and our former way of life and decide to follow Jesus. And the world around us, we can touch our families, our neighborhoods, our friends, our workplaces by acts of love and service and prayer. Just like the world changers of Acts, we are given that dignity, that privilege to be world changers through our active work and our prayer work. You know, one way that I see how these two worlds come together is in communion. And where the bread and the cup, they're tangible, physical things. But they represent a very big thing that happened in the heavenlies, where at the sacrifice of Jesus, that the power of sin was broken, that we can enter into a full relationship with God. And so we're going to engage with communion this morning. And I would like to ask the ushers to come forward and distribute the elements. And if you are a follower of Jesus, we encourage you to participate in communion. Let's worship together.